State Hillary a secret bisex freak swinger? Ugh. That's according to the same tabloid that broke political cheating stories on Vice President candidate John Edwards and Gary Hart's own sordid sex tales on the monkey business boat. But will this get any traction in the mainstream media? The question, of course, answers itself, as they have refused to cover the topic despite running Trump's supposed victims 24/7. In the latest crazy twist in the press race is a claim that Hillary used a Hollywood fixer to arrange lesbian trysts with stars and also cover up her affairs with men such as Vince Foster. Credibly linked to Hillary's lovers have been stars like Yoko Ono, who herself claimed to have slept with the former First Lady decades ago. Huma Hummus Abedin is another one. The Muslim girl scout and Sharia law booster is also claimed to be her squeeze. Toothsome night court starlet Marky Post is also claimed to be another conquest that supposedly Bill walked in on, as well as the grotesque monster Donna Shalala, and undoubtedly many others. Her male conquests included Vince Blows My Mind Foster, who later took his own life. And the man who claimed to have done this, and the story is about to come out in your local supermarket. I arranged a meeting for Hillary and a woman in an exclusive Beverly Hills hotel, said the man who was hired by the Clintons via a Hollywood executive to cover up their scandals. And she had come to the studio to see the filming of a movie in 1994. While I was there, I helped her slip out of a back exit for a one-on-one session with the other woman. It was made to look casual, leaving quietly rather than being caught up in the melee. But really, it was for something presumably more sordid. And other things in this report, this shadowy figure provided proof of his employment for the Clintons and 12 fixes he helped cover up, including Hillary's attack against Monica Lewinsky, crooked reporters on the take from the Clinton camp that were recently updated, including Glenn Thrush, how he covered up Bill's CD romp with hookers, and which A-list celebrity had a secret affair with Bill during his presidency. And so, meanwhile, everything is turning on tonight's debate, where Trump gets his last chance to address his tormentor as Hillary fights to stay vertical. She's already horizontal. Her latest WikiLeaks included a statement she cannot walk around at a speech she needed a lectern to lean into. This becomes obvious when watching her, but in another WikiLeak, she asked for, or her friend, her Huma Hummus Abedin, asked for a lectern that she could put her elbows onto, basically to lean down on. So she has a hard time. She's just got a real hard time getting this stuff together. And despite her diminished capacity, like a fatally wounded Hollywood B-movie monster, she still remains a formidable and dangerous opponent. Hopefully Hillary is somewhere traveling across America in broad daylight in the back of her specially modified Scooby van, getting a sleep on her full-size bed in there, and right next to her big black bald nurse with the diazepam pen and heart restarting paddles, getting her perpetual beauty sleep. Well, good morning, folks. So many things going on right now, and I couldn't tell you about all of them, but we've got this incredible race going on, and there's not going to be an end to it. You know, it's an incredible story. Now, this news broke. I don't have any doubt that this is true information, although it needs to be confirmed, obviously. But don't we have the sense that it doesn't really matter because it's Hillary, and he is and she is fighting for a legacy, and she's standing up for women, or she's doing whatever it is she's doing. Hillary also admitted in her WikiLeaks that She wants Obamacare to unravel. While that may be true, she must want to become the savior of Obamacare. She wants to become the savior of it because that would give her the special status that she sought before when she tried to create her own Hillary Care, and which went down in flames. And as this one is going down in flames, they're saying increasingly, and even as I mentioned to you before, Democratic senators or governors, pardon me, are saying this is not working for our state. So as the costs rise, and you remember the way that this was designed, it was designed to fail, too big to not fail, as you recall, because what they did is they put in elements of the a plan that we're going to go in 1, 2, 3, 4 years later. Why would you do that? You do that because they're not sustainable. And you know, what Obama wanted was for them to kick in after he was reelected, most of all, and also when he was out of office, so it didn't destroy his legacy. Now, Hillary looks at this. Her husband has already said, Obamacare, it is Obamacare, it's not working, and it's a total disaster. He can say it. You know, Trump cannot say it without getting booed by the Democrats. The president, a former president, can say it. So Hillary comes along, and she supposedly fixes this mess. And what the plan was, transparently, if you don't need to get insurance until you've got a very serious disease, then you don't waste money on insurance till you get your disease, or you find that you're suffering from some incredibly expensive thing, you go in and get insurance. That's when you get it. And so it was meant to fail because no insurance company could be based on that model. So now that it's falling apart, and insurance company after insurance company have pulled out, I believe Blue Cross pulled out of New Mexico, but we've got this all across the United States. The thing was designed to fail so that it would collapse into the government and the government would take it over. That's pretty sad, but that's how they do stuff. As you've noticed, what they do is they lie, cheat, and steal, and are trying to break the system. We haven't had two points of GDP growth in 8 years, and no wonder everybody is just scrambling around to have enough money to buy a present for their loved ones at Christmas. Anyway, 614. And I've got John Zimmerman on, representative of New Mexico House District 39, and we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking to him and his campaign. He was gracious enough to agree to come on the show. And Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in. We will be right back. And a little Dave Brubeck. Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah, Sam here. I got a technical question.
Sure.
About Hillary. After her email problems with the FBI, even if nobody wanted to prosecute or do anything, how could a person like that ever get a security clearance? I mean, suppose she was just an ordinary citizen.
That's
and
true.
Had made that kind of careless mistake.
That's true. Is
there any way she could ever get a security clearance?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can I put you on hold because we're not on the air right now? I'd like to put the comment on the air.
Okay.
And you said Sam?
Yeah.
Sam, thanks for the call. I'll put you on hold. It'll be maybe 1 minute, okay?
Anyway, it's just a technical
Sam.
Question. I mean,
Sam,
how can he be president
Sam.
If he can't have a security guard?
Sam, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Please listen. I'm just going to put you on hold for a second, okay?
Okay.
Thanks. I got to get Lee Potter on. I don't have his number. Okay. We'll talk about anything you want to get into, but let's answer whatever it is. Who's your opponent? Never even heard of him. All right, folks, and we do have Sam. And Sam, you had a comment about the security clearance of Hillary Clinton should she get into office.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just a technical question. If an ordinary member of the State Department had been through what she has with carelessness or whatever you want to call it, even if they didn't prosecute, could such a person ever have a security clearance? And if so, if she couldn't, how could she be president? Just a question.
Sam, I've got John Zimmerman here, who was a Navy commander. He retired as a commander. And he had a full Navy clearance for docks and stuff. John, what do you think?
Well, you know, Kelly, as I was telling you earlier, you know, after 42 years in the Navy, I've held a top secret clearance. I was a communications officer. So, you know, anybody in government knows, they know whether something is classified or not. And there's just no excuse for revealing classified information, period. And, you know, had I... revealed any of the classified information that Hillary has done, I'd be chipping rocks probably in Leavenworth.
Yeah. So, Sam, what do you think? It's not going to keep her out of office, though.
That's exactly what I would have expected. But it's a technical question. I mean, how could somebody legally be the commander-in-chief who could not have a security clearance? I mean, it's a technical question.
It's not a technical question. It's a political question because the people who will make the decision on this at the highest level are political appointees, or they're in the political system. They will not use precedent, in my opinion.
Well, all I'm saying is that the degree of carelessness and whatever you want to call it is open and shut. Nobody challenges that. And I would think that if she couldn't have a security clearance, she couldn't be in that position. You're right, it's political, but I mean... Don't the people that I issue security clearances have any say?
No, I'm saying it's ultimately there is no group of wise men or women or adults that are running everything. It's the people that you see on your TV screen when they have these congressional hearings.
Okay, well, it's just a question.
Thank you very much. Sounds like he's speaking over a handmade phone, but anyway. John Zimmerman, good to have you on the show.
Good to be here, Kelly.
And had you on a little while back. Let me ask you something. You're in Doniana, Sierra, and Grant County. So how big is that?
Well, basically it goes from Fair Acres north and pretty much everything west of the Rio Grande all the way up into Sierra County. It kind of skips around a hatch itself into Sierra County, if you're familiar with I-25 and the Hillsboro exit, basically
sure.
It takes the Hillsboro exit all the way, it goes all the way into Grant County and includes primarily the mining district. That's Hurley, Baird, and Santa Clara. I have just a little slice of Silver City itself.
That's a big area to cover.
It's 120 miles from my house to Grant County. And I have family in Grant County also. My daughter has a business over there.
Well, that's good. All right. So let me ask you this. Issues this year in this race, what are some of the issues?
Well, I think the biggest issues, and they haven't changed much from when I first ran a couple of years ago. I think the economy, jobs, those are what's on people's mind.
Are we ever going to be able to break through this kind of jobless rut we're in?
I do think we are. Several years back, actually before I actually was elected, they passed corporate tax reductions. And those are just now beginning to take effect. And, you know, this coming year, I believe it's going to go down from, I think it's at 8% now, and it's going to go down to somewhere just under 6%. And so it is attracting industries. When we look at our neighboring states, you know, it's all 5% or less. So
Texas has a model economy for the United States. I mean, you know, even though Texas does not have the most ideal climate, you've got a number of corporations relocating from California that has one of the most beautiful climates and is one of the most, you know, marquee states in the United States.
That's right. And, But, you know, we actually have more days of sunshine than any other state. It's clearer weather. We have more natural resources in this state. I mean, when you look at what we have to offer in this state, it's tremendous. And but you know, it's a profit motive, obviously. You know, if you can't make money, you
can't be in business.
You can't be in business. And so, you know, when you have a corporate tax rate, you know, it was hovering around 12%, I believe, in the state, somewhere along in there, you know, before this reduction started. And with that kind of, I mean, if I'm in business, what am I going to do? If I'm a big corporation and I want to be charged that kind of tax, guess what? I want to go where there's no tax.
Do you ever have business people call you up and say, we're struggling, we need somebody to kind of represent us on something? Give us an example or some of the issues that come up. And folks, we're talking to John Zimmerman, and he's running for re-election in District 39, and it's a giant district.
Well, you know, Kelly, as I mentioned to you earlier, my daughter actually has a business in Silver City and one in Deming. And it's hard for a small business to stay in business just from the regulations and the tax. The taxes are just enormous. And, you know, when you start looking at trying to hire employees, that's all cost of business.
Yep.
And so when people wonder why prices are so high, all they have to do is look at the cost to stay in business itself. And people, you know, you have to stop and think, okay, what does this actually cost? And bottom line dollar. And from there you go and that's how you figure out a profit and sell your product. And a lot of these products are needed, you know, by people. And so when you look at the cost, you're going, wow, what goes into this?
Do you think that the legislature in general is aware of what it means to have a business and struggle against some of this stuff?
Oh, absolutely. I think I think sometime in the past, though, past legislators, you know, of course, it's been controlled. You got to look at our state. You know, 104 years of history, the Senate has never had a Republican majority.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. And you look at the House, it's only had a Republican majority twice, once during Eisenhower in this last 2 years. And
so, we are, John Zimmerman, we are struggling in the state to have an economy.
Well, you know, I believe in a true two-party system. And we've never really had a true two-party system in our state. And until we get to a true two-party system in our state, you know, we're going to continue to struggle. That's whether it's education, economy, and you know, we have that now for the last 2 years. But we need to keep it. And we need to progress and keep going.
All right. They're pouring a lot of money into advertising from outside of the state from Michael Bloomberg, who is the billionaire from former New York mayor, and also from a union fund, and they put $250,000 into one pack in particular to run ads. And I don't know if you've been hit by that or not, but.
Well, I just heard a hit ad on me, and it says, I don't like clean water because of, you know, I'm supporting the mining interest and it's just crazy, some of the stuff they come up with.
Well,
and
you know,
it's just lies.
If you follow the environmental movement, they would shut down every industry out there to save the world.
Well, and that's true. But, you know, talking about the water where mining is concerned, several years back, not actually the other party actually hammered out. We had only four pages of environmental regulations for mining. That's the Mining Act of 25 years ago. The Environmental Department hammered out 45 pages of very, very specific, you must do this, you cannot do this. And that's been attacked by the Sierra Club, Wild Earth Guardians. It went through two appellate courts, two different appellate courts on two different occasions, and our own attorney general decided to take it to the Supreme Court. And it's like, gosh, how much court do we have to go through before we decide that that, you know, this is law, this is regulations, and you know, the mining industry really likes this, and the reason they like it is because there's no there's no doubt what they have to do. It's you must do this and you can't do that.
Business loves predictability.
Absolutely, because then they can predict their profit margin and what they have to do to make a profit.
And the fact that we've got several members of the these earth movements that are running for the Senate and the House is kind of interesting.
Well, and you know, they get where they get their support. You know, the apple didn't fall too far from the tree. And so that's kind of an oxymoron or whatever. But, you know,
a cliche.
But, you know, when we talk about that, that's very, very true. That's why they do the things
they're
they
advocates.
Do.
They're advocates.
Yeah, they're going to say,
and,
yeah.
And we're paid advocates, and one of them was on the city council, and the media would never talk about the fact that he was a paid advocate for one of these earth groups that, you know.
And now that person is actually running for a legislative seat.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
Absolutely. There's no end to it, though. We'll take a break here. 6:29 on the button. Kelly O'Connell with John Zimmerman, and he is in District 39. It's a giant district, and we'll be right back to talk about him a little bit more. 523-1450 if you have a question or a comment, and we'll be back to carry on with John. Well, we're here with John Zimmerman, and, you know, I haven't done any investigation on this. I've just kind of been more focused on the national and the state. But, John, I would assume that there's national money pouring into every single contested race around the United States that is from back east.
Oh, absolutely. And one only has to look at the source. If you listen to the end of each radio ad, for instance, it'll say who is actually paying for that ad. And the money is pouring in. I was told about $250,000 was put into New Mexico for the legislative races just for radio.
That's just that one pack.
Yes, just one pack. That's I think that was that
Patriot Majority.
Right.
And the then, unpatriotic minority.
Right.
That's,
and then there is another one, Kelly. I think it's Progress or Progressive or something other like that. They recently put out a radio ad on me and, you know, said I don't like water, like I said. And, you know, they went on and, you know, they said I'm not looking out for New Mexico interest. And, you know, I educated my children here in New Mexico and, you know, one has a master's. The other one is an engineer. His wife's an engineer. She's from Baird area, but educated them. And there's no jobs here for them. So where are they at? They're in our neighboring state of Arizona. And you know, we've got to start creating jobs in New Mexico for our kids to keep our kids home. I've got 10 grandchildren, and you know, I don't even hardly get to see them because of that. They're all out of state.
And I don't know of any other state that seems reluctant to have job creation. And I have never heard so-called leadership in a community get up and proudly say, supposedly I've had a number of people tell me there are leaders in this community that have said repeatedly, this is a no-growth zone.
Well, you know, leadership, you know, after 42 years myself in the Navy, I was 18 years enlisted, 24 years as commissioned officer. I actually had six reserve commands, 13 years as a commanding officer. And I think I can pretty well say what leadership is. And so when you said leadership, I call that non-leadership. It's and I don't know where they're coming from. You know, I don't know. I don't know where their background.
Well, it's far leftism. It's Agenda 21. The mayor of the city signed us up into that. But we got to have job growth, and it is absolutely crazy to not want prosperity.
Right. Well, and you know, you mentioned Agenda 21. Some people call it 2040 now, but if you compare the 2040 or the Agenda 21, go back and look at the Communist Manifesto. And put them side by side and start reading them, and you're going to go, oh my gosh, the parallels, they're almost word for word. So, you know, but people don't necessarily want to know that. They don't want to look into that a lot of times. And I think that's important that you be well informed. Having gone to Catholic schools myself, you know, one thing that the nuns always taught me was God gave you two ears and one mouth, so you should be listening twice as much as you speak. And also going to school, one of the things that was stressed, do your homework. If you don't do your homework, then you can't speak intelligently about anything, or you can't even answer a question. So doing your homework, I think, is real, real important. You know, so I encourage people every opportunity for them to look at, compare those documents. They don't have to take my word for it. It's readily available. You can look at them online. You can print them. But the bottom line is to encourage people to do that.
Well, and you know, I've spent a lot of time. I'm trying to educate people as I educate myself further on these topics, and. It's terrible to hear that this movement out of the United Nations that's been so influential is related to the Communist Manifesto. It's terrible.
Well, and you know, it's an open book. Anybody can determine that. I don't think that anybody is necessarily uneducated to where they can't find these things out. It's whether or not they choose to go and to research these things themselves and to find out. And, you know, it's like I said, you can have all the information available to you in the world.
Well, and we're back here with, and I do have Brad Cates coming on. Brad Cates has been a little bit of a stealth candidate, but John, it's great to have a military person in because we got a lot of military people in this area. And I think individuals in the armed forces like to see that some of their own get into public service of a different kind. And the warrior professions are unique. They have their unique demands and stresses. And I think as time goes by, there's less and less appreciation for the type of patriotic mentality and commitment to America that is in the armed forces. I feel like there's been a tremendous pushback against that since the 60s.
Well, you know, I enlisted in 1961 shortly after, you know, we had Vietnam, and, you know, we were rejected, when we came home.
Yeah.
I went through all that.
You've been through all of it.
I've been through all of that. I was actually mobilized for Bosnia, Kosovo, and enduring freedom. I actually wrote the communications and search and rescue plan for Bosnia and Kosovo. And, speaking of that, I just recently down in Fort Worth ran across this man that was speaking on behalf of the Air Force. There was like 200 airmen that were guests of Duck Dynasty 500. And I was down there on some business. And, I was considered a VIP of Duck Dynasty. And so we got to talking, and he said, you know, we lost two planes during Kosovo. And I said, yeah, we lost a stealth, and 10 days later we lost an F-16. And he says, thank you. He says, thank you, thank you. He says, I was the pilot of that F-16.
Wow.
And he's now the vice chief of the United States Air Force, four-star general.
Wow. So what exactly happened in that crash? What happened?
Well, I mean, he had a malfunction or something or other on his plane and was shot down. And so
he was lucky.
He bailed out.
To be alive.
2 hours, I think it was 2 hours and 17 minutes or something like that before we actually got in to get him. And he had to evade enemy troops, and did, and, you know, he was thankful, and, you know, I was just doing my job. That's what I'm trained to do. And, you know, our military, we fight as we train,
mm-hmm.
and are trained as we fight. And, you know, that goes to say, you know, when we talk about even our police officers, you know, they train for situations. And their reactions. That's how you stay alive. And so, you know, all this turmoil that we have about police officers now, it's just awful. My brother is retired. My younger brother is a retired police officer. And, you know, they train and they imagine these situations. And until you're actually in one of those yourself, you can't imagine what your reaction is going to be. I've actually, when I went through a course here some time back for concealed carry, I had the opportunity on a trainer, and it says, what is going to be your reaction? And they would actually have mock things. And you're going, oh, my gosh, I did that. Because those are natural human reactions.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why you train.
Well, I wonder if this generation of all these kids that are playing Xbox are going to be better pilots.
Boy, I don't know. I mean, these things that we make now, we invented them, and, you know, they're amazing. And, you know, I just saw a drone demonstration here several months back, and it was amazing what that could do. Take pictures. You know, they can carry packages now.
Mm-hmm.
So
pizzas.
You know, well, yeah.
they say that the future of warfare could be drones and robots.
Well, I think that they'll play a large part in it, certainly.
They do have this. The Navy has a new super ship that is unmanned.
Absolutely. That's the USS Zumwalt. It's not unmanned, I think.
Well, they've got a new unmanned one as well. Right. That they're just kind of. But the Zumwalt is supposed to be the most sophisticated ship ever built.
Right. It's 610 feet long, and
it's stealth, right?
It's stealth. It has the signature of a small little fishing boat. The weaponry that it can carry is just absolutely amazing. You know, and I do believe in strength through our arms and stuff. I mean, that's how
peace through strength.
That's right.
Peace that was Reagan's idea.
Yep, and it does work. You know, when you look at our submarine force. In fact, we have one of the newest Virginia class submarines named after our own state, the USS New Mexico. And I've actually visited. I had the honor and opportunity to attend its commissioning and stuff. And it's just an awesome ship.
Well, let's take a break and come back. And I want to talk about some of your achievements in office and why people should consider voting for you again, John. Got John Zimmerman here. He is Representative New Mexico House District 39. He's got some opposition, and folks, it's very important this year that you really go to the polls, and it's the fight of our lives. 648 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. And if you are a conservative Democrat, I know a lot of you guys are out there listening to the show, consider crossing the aisle. I know that you do already because we're free thinkers in New Mexico. We'll be right back. It's 6:51, and we do have John Zimmerman here. And, John, I'm going to ask for your contact information, but I did Google this. The U.S. Navy now has an unmanned drone warship, and it's the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA, that's put this out. The Navy drone ship is 132-foot active anti-submarine warfare continuous trail unmanned vessel known as the Sea Hunter. Cost around $120 million to build. It's been commissioned. It's going to be produced for about $20 million. These robot ships can cross the ocean, and they don't have to waste any space underneath the ship for bunks or kitchens or toilets.
Yeah.
or ping pong areas.
Or people.
Yeah, or people. So anyway, but John Zimmerman, retired Navy commander. And John, what are the things that you're proudest of being in the state legislature and sacrificing your time to serve your constituents?
Well, you know, Kelly, I actually sat on House Appropriation and Finance during the session, and also sat on the Health Committee. And so, you know, I retired as a project engineer at White Sands, and so I understand finances. Sometimes you have to make really hard choices.
Yeah. Like, and right now we've got a budget deficit, and they're slashing programs such as the district attorney and the court.
Right. Well, and you know, maybe they needed to be. Maybe they got a little too fast.
Sometimes belt tightening is good.
And sometimes belt tightening is good. And then, you know, when we looked at the special session we just finished, the Senate, you know, run by the Democrats, they actually handed us a bill that was just a bunch of junk.
Mm-hmm.
And what we had to do is we had to go through it, and then they badmouthed us because we were there for, 5 or 6 days. But, you know, they cut K through 12 drastically, 31 some million dollars. And so we had to look at that, and we said, no, we can't cut K through 12. If you look at the average amount of money that is for like a college student, we're about $1,800 above the national average per student. But if you look at our K through 12, we're about 1,200 under the average in our state. So, you know, when we had to look to cut, where do you cut? And, you know, K through 12, when we don't have our graduation rates are somewhere around, you know, 70%, that's a big problem. You know, talk about some of the legislation that I'm best proud of. I championed several House bills, which were primarily helping our own National Guard force. One of them increased the amount of life insurance that is afforded by federal government to make the state the same amount. In other words, it went $250,000 to $400,000. And whenever that changes, the federal amount changes, we always had to go back to the legislature. And, you know, this is just crazy to have to keep going back to the legislature. So I said, you know, let's make this automatic, you know, in the state. And, you know, it got bipartisan support, sailed through both houses and was passed. It signed into law. That was the first session. And then there was a fund that provides money for mobilized National Guard. And it's a voluntary fund that people put money into. And, you know, sometimes it takes 4 to 6 weeks before their pay checks when they're mobilized and are sent across the water to catch up with their families. And so it allowed their families to either get loans or to actually get a grant from this fund. But it was specifically marked for an operation that is already over with. So nobody could get any of these funds. They could apply, but the operation is over, so done. Another one, this last session that I did was a loan forgiveness program for new students at the new School of Osteopathic Medicine. I and Dr. Terry McMillan co-sponsored that bill, and we did get it signed into law. And
we need to have stuff like that. A loan debt is crushing students across America.
Absolutely is. And one of the provisions of that bill was that it would provide doctors into rural areas. And so the loan forgiveness, it allows 10% loan forgiveness for the first year that they practice in a rural area, 20 the second, 30 the third, and then 40 the last. And so, you know, once a doctor has established a practice for 4 years, they're probably going to stay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are the kind of incentives that we want to make, as opposed to, you know, something that was the reverse of that.
All right. So we got just one minute left, really. What's your contact info? How can people support you?
Of course, my contact information is available on the state website, but I put my mobile phone out. It's 575-649-1217.
649-1217.
Right. And I do have a website, and all my information is there. You know, I take calls from anybody. I don't care if they're a New Mexico resident. I'm a representative for all the people, not just people in my district.
What if a Marxist tried to call you?
I'll take his call anyway. I may not agree with him, but and that's what I tell people. We may not agree, but I'll take your call.
Well, maybe you'll convert him.
That'd be nice if I could do that.
Probably highly unlikely. Thanks for coming on, John. It is a real pleasure to have you on. And thanks for the service. And you have a spectacular career. You had a spectacular career in the military. And to retire as a commander is a real honor.
Well, you know, Kelly, it was a pleasure for me to serve, and it's an honor. And I think anybody that's been in the service feels the same way.
And now you're serving the people through the legislature and doing it in a pretty low profile way at the same time.
Well, and we, you know, we get paid a lot of money.
What's it, $10,000 or something like that?
Well, you know, we don't get paid a salary at all. All we get is we do get per diem when we go out of town, and we get our mileage. But that never covers everything.
Thanks for coming on, John Zimmerman, folks. And he is part of your representation, New Mexico House District 39. And consider pulling the lever for him. We'll take a break here on the hour. And we're going to have Brad Cates running for the DA. He's going to be in just a few moments. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. To call in, we'll be right back. Thank you. Well, you know, we got Brad Cates here, but you know, they had this thing that John McCain used to drive around in called the Straight Talk Express. Well, Hillary's got a new bus, the tour bus. It's the Straight Feces Express. It's a bus with her name on it, and it dumped human. This is an incredible story. Brad Cates is here with his mouth hanging open. He cannot believe it. He's led a very sheltered life, but they had this Forward Together, which now I have a different image in my mind. Forward Together, porta potty with a two-seated porta potty. But so anyway, Lawrenceville, Georgia, Lawrenceville police are investigating a claim that involves a Democrat National Committee tour bus illegally dumping human waste into a storm drain between campaign stops. The incident happened on Grayson Highway Tuesday morning and was part of early voting. And police say when the officers arrived on the scene, toilet paper was scattered on the roadway near the storm drain, and there was a foul smell. And I wonder if any of Hillary's Depends were dumped out on the road, too. Here's a little clip from this, though. This is important. This is breaking news. This is breaking wind as well. Yeah, this is from...
The DNC is apologizing for dumping human waste down a Gwinnett County storm drain. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Tracy Hutchins.
And I'm Ben Swan. Now, this happened earlier today on Grayson Highway. You can see a picture of it here. Now, state officials, they are investigating. CBS 46 Gwinnett County reporter Christian De La Rosa live at that scene. So, Christian, the hazmat team actually had to come out, correct?
Yes, they did, and witnesses describe a chaotic scene here on the 500 block of Grayson Highway. They say it wasn't just fire trucks, but also toilet paper everywhere and a foul smell. Now, witnesses sent us pictures of the bus. The DNC tells me it was not a Hillary Clinton campaign bus, even though her face is on it. The bus was seen dumping human waste into a storm drain. A businessman who witnessed what happened said he could not believe his eyes.
It's just wrong. It's just, you know, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Hillary Clinton. I don't care if you're Donald Trump. I don't care who you are. You don't dump human waste down a storm drain.
Now, the DNC spokesperson sent me a statement apologizing. She says, in part, this was an honest mistake, and we apologize to the Lawrenceville community for any harm we may have caused. Now, we also know that state officials are investigating what happened, and police tell me illegal dumping is an arrestable offense. This latest here in Gwinnett County, I'm Christian De La Rosa, CBS 46 News.
OMG, that is incredible. What in the world? If you were the DA, what would you do about this, Brad Cates?
Well, as always, we have a chaotic event happening here in the Kelly O'Connell Show. Cutting edge questions.
Would you demand that the National Guard chase down this bus and there was some frontier justice?
Well, they called out the hazmat team. I mean, the National Guard
should have called out the SWAT team as well and cornered them.
Yes, makes sense. Well, Donald Trump may get his wish after all. She might be arrested before the election, as it turns out.
So it was an honest mistake. Let's do a little legal analysis. What part of it was an honest? Did they hit the wrong button, or did they honestly misread the law that they could dump the human waste down the storm drain? I don't get it.
Going down the road generating today's press releases, and just the toilet was full at that point, and they had to do something with it.
All right, folks, we got Brad Cates here. What an introduction.
Yes, I'll remember this one. Thank you, Kelly.
All right, so Brad, welcome back on the show. It's been a little while. Haven't heard from you.
Well, pleasure to be here.
How you been?
Yes, well enough. Thank you.
How's the campaign?
Yes, also going well enough. It's all-consuming, as John Zimmerman just told you. It takes up your day and your night, trying to get some work done.
It's a wicked mistress. Yeah.
Yes. Sure enough. But it's part of democracy, and it'll be over soon enough.
Do you have a tour bus?
Well, no, but I have my U-Haul. Haven't you seen my U-Haul?
Van. Is that the one that you could hear people pounding to get out of?
No, there's no one
campaign workers
in
there.
But it does have my face on it. But
okay.
It does not have a built-in toilet.
Okay.
So we won't be having that problem.
All right. So what's going on in the campaign? Fill this in.
Well, last night we...
Brad Cates running for DA, by the way.
Last night we had a nice debate at the temple up on Sonoma.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nicely attended.
Did it? Did it?
The county candidates were
did
there.
It end with fisticuffs?
No, it did not.
Did
it
Kiki have to push the parties apart?
It ended with coffee and cake. But,
oh, that's good.
It's, Mark Van Dyke and I had a debate, and then each of the other county candidates in turn. So it was a nice evening.
All right, and what did you guys discuss?
Well, our views of the district attorney's office and the direction that it should take, and what we see differently in our vision about where it should go.
Well, interesting. Okay, so and now I got. Wait, let's take a break here and reload. But I got to catch my breath after the Hillary bilge dumping. Her landlocked garbage scow just discharged all its waste. But we'll come back, and I'm going to ask you about freedom of speech and billboards. Okay.
All right.
All right.
That's good.
7:12, 7:13. Got Brad Cates, and man, Brad Cates must have the most spectacular resume I've ever seen. But we'll come back and talk to him. And he, so many stories to tell. But we'll focus on the campaign, and we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 713, 523, 1450 to call in, 523, 1450. Well, we're here with Brad Cates, and so Brad, so billboards and free speech. What comes to mind when you hear those terms?
Well, I wanted to comment on that because it surprised me that there was that editorial in the newspaper on Sunday, and from the student who just up and admitted apparently committing a felony, and I'm just so shocked that it was just so cavalier that he would say, "Well, it offended me." And because it offended me, I felt like destroying it.
Well, we were talking on another show another day. Maybe it was just me talking, but there's this, I think it's actually with Dr. McMillan. There is this new concept out there that has to do with a lack of education, formal training in thinking and logic and such, what they used to call rhetoric, I guess, and being propaganda puppets. Children are raised in this society without any strong background in logic and the ability to think. That the most important thing in life is to be able to think rationally. And apparently that doesn't matter in America anymore. So you've got all these kids that are just empty vessels for propaganda, and they hear somebody get trashed. And uniformly, somebody like Trump gets trashed from every possible side, and it begins to seem like it's legitimate because nobody would do propaganda at that level. So therefore it's true. So therefore any attack against Trump, was it a Trump sign?
Yes. Yes.
Any attack against Trump, no matter who does it, no matter what their official capacity is, no matter what their, how they're supposed to comport themselves, journalists or whoever, public officials, is blessed by God because God is evil, Trump is evil, and we know that because
he disagrees with it.
Well, from every source, we're getting this Trump is bad message, so therefore it's true.
Well, bad or not isn't the point. The First Amendment, and maybe it's no coincidence that it's the First Amendment to the Constitution, talks about freedom of speech, and that is the very foundation of any democracy, is where each party expresses their views. No matter how offensive that might be, no matter whether the listener does or not want to hear it, whether it bothers the listener, the speaker is allowed to say it. In a parliamentary democracy, each speaker on the floor of the legislature speaks in turn, and the next one adds his comments. In a debate situation, in a political situation, it's just the foundation of what makes a democracy.
How could you find the truth if you don't have free speech?
Precisely. And so somehow in the last few years, and I'm seeing it increasingly this year, it's like they're trying to shut up somebody else, shut up someone else's speech. Some things are not acceptable to be said, and you can't say them. If you take any exception with the accepted theory now of global warming or any number of subjects, they demonize you. The attorney generals of several states, as you know, are trying to file a racketeering lawsuit against some scientists because they disagreed with the theory of global warming.
Yeah.
Just for an example.
Well,
the Trump thing's a perfect example on the sign. He, the student, says in the newspaper that he's just so offended at the things that Trump represents that he needs to be, in essence, shut up. And what if this student disagreed on, I don't know, maybe you drive a big F-350 diesel, Kelly, and so he comes and trashes your car because he doesn't, you know, he thinks you ought to have an electric car. What if he comes smashes out the window of your station because one of your speakers like me says something that lash out violently? You sponsor your own billboard, you sponsor your own rally. On November 10th, 1932, when propaganda minister Goebbels oversaw the book burning that day, and it was to mark the end of Jewish intellectualism because it had gone too far. But it wasn't just that. In his proclamation, he said that any works that espoused excessively liberal and democratic ideas need to be burned, and any views about life that were this is his words, that were exceptionally sugary and sweet needed to be burned, and any sexual materials that were espoused the individual egotism needed to be burned. And so he burned them all. And isn't that offensive? And in concept, I ask you, is trashing someone's billboard any different than terrorists showing up at Charlie Hebdo and killing the staff. It's you don't want the other side to worship in peace or speak in peace, so you fight them with violence instead of words.
A very, very, yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so how does this relate to being district attorney?
Well, it relates to it in the sense that I believe in our democratic system and I believe in freedom of speech. And Mark D'Antonio and I spoke last night. We each expressed our views, and the listeners can make their choices based on that. But that's the way a civil campaign should be run, and I'm frustrated at seeing others. Legislative races in this county seem to have evolved into the gutter.
Well, there you've got ads that are running things that are transparently false against candidates like Dr. McMillan and Andy Nunez.
Well, Dr. McMillan, one of the finest doctors and human beings in town, I know him, and then these ads, it's not right. Why don't they speak to the issues that he's for or against, and he'll address them, and the candidates running against him should address them.
Well, I mean, the people that are getting the benefit from this, Nathan Tiny Smalls and I can't remember the other one. They should stand up and say, you know, we didn't pay for this and we don't agree with it. I mean, speaking of freedom of speech, they're getting the benefit from this basically slander, and they're refusing to stand up for truth in advertising. I think it's terrible.
You're a very good point. At this at the debate last night, I actually complimented all of the county candidates, because I haven't seen any of this kind of slander going on, not in the DA's race or the treasurer's race or whatever. Mm-hmm. The candidates speak to the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, in these legislative matters, the person, quote, benefiting from this slander should speak up against it, disavow it.
We're with Brad Cates. We'll take a break. 724, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450. We'll be right back. Got local news for you. All right, we're here with Brad Cates at 7:30 exactly. Nice time of the year, nice weather out there, of course, and it is get you your temperature 61 degrees. But okay, Brad, so what are some upcoming events for your campaign?
Well, in a few days we have the Chamber of Commerce doing an event. One comes to mind. I just worked on it yesterday.
Well, tell people a little bit about your resume, some of the stuff that you've done that's kind of gotten you ready to run for the DA.
Well, I was student body president here at MSU, so I'm not sure if since Fernando Macias was student body president 2 years after Judge Macias and Steve Pierce 2 years before, perhaps this is a
real trifecta there.
That's right. Right. Real trailblazers. Anyways, I was elected to the legislature right after that and served 8 years. And then I worked for the Justice Department in Washington for some time, ran the National Confiscation Program for money laundering and such, wrote a lot of those laws, and raised $1 billion in some years. And actually, Ed Meese at the time, the Attorney General, said, Brad's the only profit center in the government. We have been here for about 2 or 3 years running.
Where did the money come from?
International drug cartel.
Oh, that's nice.
It was, and I helped create that program. I was proud of it, taking the cash, taking the aircraft and such.
Pablo Escobar, et cetera?
Yes, worked on all of those cases. Escobar and Ochoa took a ranch in Florida one time, which was interesting. Had little Pasofino horses, and the brand was like an infinity symbol, which is an eight. Turned sideways, which is also a play on the word Ocho for Ochoa. So that was a fun ranch we took once. So we worked on that, and of course the Camarena investigation. It was a good time, and felt like I was doing a lot of good. And then, as you know, I'm one of my jobs, I'm counsel in the House Judiciary Committee during the state legislature. And last year, I wrote the law that repealed the law for New Mexico, because it passed unanimously, and 10 states have passed it since then, including California. It fell off the rails because of human greed and such. Every police department in the country started using it and taking money from people without an arrest, without probable cause, without a trial, without right not to speak against yourself. It was not right. It wasn't any more than a third world highway shakedown to take money. And so we've repealed that in Mexico. I'm really pleased with that.
All right. So why should people vote for you?
Well, I think that perhaps is one example. I'm creative. I have a lifetime of experience both as a prosecutor, a federal prosecutor, as a federal judge at the U.S. Department of the Interior, as a state prosecutor, as a legislator. So legislative branch, judicial branch. I've been an attorney for businesses, and I understand what business people's needs are. You take all of this and you balance these things, and that's what a prosecutor needs to do. It's all about justice. It's about a triage, as it were, of the cases that are coming in. Thousands of cases are presented to a prosecutor's office every year. I don't know the state numbers, but 20 years ago, there were 10,000 federal crimes. Now there are 300,000 federal crimes. Everything in the world is getting criminalized, making felons out of people who can then never again have a decent life. We create an entire criminal underclass of people who aren't necessarily criminals. So what we need to do is prioritize those that we put the state's resources on. Kelly, but that I mean, when you're a career criminal, when you are a violent person, you need to be taken out of our society. Statistically speaking, those few people commit over 90% of the crimes. If you get them out of the society, that reduces the crime way more than prosecuting hundreds or thousands of other people who've done relatively piddly things. So what you want to do is you want to look at your intake. You say, this person really... they have a mental problem. They don't need to take up a bed in the state prison. They need to be treated for a mental issue they have. Or they have a substance abuse issue. Of course, all of this takes easier said than done, right, Kelly? I mean, we know it's easier said than done. But as you can, you divert them out of the criminal system and treat them so that they can become productive members of society. And then the prosecutor's office, the DA's office, does what it's been supposed to do, prosecutes career criminals.
Fantastic. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, guys. This is Jim. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How about yourself, Jim? Thanks for the call, and what's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was listening to Mr. Cates, and he mentioned something about the greatest percentages are criminals create most of the crimes. But we also know that when you go after those people, unfortunately, you're going to be branded as a racist or a homophobe or a bigot or whatever you are.
Well, why is that?
Well, look at the news. I mean, the policemen try to do their jobs. And I was talking to somebody yesterday about this and see what Mr. Cates thinks about this. But there are people standing by that they know there's going to be a problem. They have their cameras ready. They go in, they institute, they instigate. And once the police starts to come in, that's when the cameras roll.
All right. And
They don't catch it before. They don't get it where it started from.
All right. And your point?
My point is that's probably, Kelly, one of the problems we have with a lot of the criminal cases brought today, not necessarily here, but you look nationwide, that seems to be where it's at. Cameras are everywhere. And he was just talking about people being prosecuted for crimes that they've never been, that should never be prosecuted for. A lot of that is due to this homophobic, bigoted atmosphere that we have today, racially speaking and politically speaking.
Are you saying they're not prosecuting blacks and gays because of what, political correctness?
I think that, we like to watch a show on TV called 48 Hours, and they go into a lot of the activities, and they talk about police and being corrupt. And we were just talking the other day, you know, when you look at that, there are definitely problems on both sides, but a lot of the racial arresting of black men are done by black officers. They are the ones doing the arresting, yet they hope everybody gets branded because you're for a white cop.
Okay, and so do you have a question for or statement to Brad Cates, who's running for DA on this?
Yeah, actually, I was just trying to get his feeling what he thinks about what I'm thinking.
Well, what in particular?
Well, I just said, what does he think about the ability for prosecuting people that are not necessarily to be treated as a criminal in that sense of the word? I'm trying to get his clarification of that.
I don't understand the question, and therefore he may not either. Could you restate that?
Yeah, he was talking about just a few seconds ago about the number of people that he thought that were being branded as possible criminals or doing wrongdoing that shouldn't be. I'm just trying to get his feeling from
that. Okay. All right. So, Brad, I don't really understand the question completely, but do you have an answer for this?
Yes. I'd like to comment on that. I very much believe in a colorblind society. Individuals are individuals. They should be treated as individuals. They should advance on their own merit and such. We know that, statistically speaking, the vast majority of black crime is black on black. The most of the murders are blacks killing blacks.
Yeah.
We know that in virtually every large city now, a large portion of the police department is black, black officers and such. And what we're seeing is there seems to be some elements in our country, and I don't know why, that have this vendetta against the police. And the police represent our society anymore, both in ethnically and by their views, and we need to support the police.
Well, I want to say one thing. I did some investigation where Black Lives Matter came from. There are three ladies who are community organizers who came up with the program, with the theme, with the campaign, and it is funded to a great extent by George Soros. The last violent protest that we had in North Carolina, those were people seated in from the outside. The media doesn't really cover this. They were seated in from George Soros-funded campaigns, so it seems like, to a certain extent, it is a contrived. I mean, I'm not saying there's not an issue out there, but the campaigning and the rioting and the assaults and the fires and the looting and all this is injected into these communities that are suffering some confusion over the Black Lives Matter because it's already in the media.
Well, I've heard that.
I agree with that, but you know, the first people that they will call when things go wrong are the police. Yet when they get there, a lot of times there's no cooperation.
Cooperation with who? Who's not cooperating?
With the police. We know that when we watch some of these programs, and they're live programs or actual videos of what's going on, there's a crime committed, whether it be in a white or a black area, but a lot of people do not want to get involved. So when the police, they call the police to come out and it's reported. And then they show up in the crime scene and nobody knows anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And or they say that a false thing happened. Thanks for the call, Jim. All right, folks, take a break here. Getting a little long in the tooth on that section. We'll come back and see if Brad has anything else to say about that. 740 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in. It's about 60 degrees outside. So nice. Be right back. And we do have Brad Cates in the studio, and he is running for the district attorney's office. How do people contact you, Brad? Have they fallen in love with your presentation so far?
Brad Cates for DA. .org.
Oh, okay.
And it's got all of our contact phone numbers and everything.
Unbelievable. Brilliant. We'll be right back. And we've got Brad Cates. He's running for district attorney, and he's in the studio. And so any more comments on Black Lives Matter and injustice in prosecutions, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I think I'd only say that all lives matter, and we should treat all citizens equally and fairly. I think we've been blessed here in Las Cruces that we haven't seen the kind of divisions that we're seeing elsewhere in the country. I think people support the police here. There are our neighbors and our friends and the Border Patrol as well and such. And so I think we're very fortunate in that regard here, and I'd like to build on that trust that we see here.
All right. So anything else on your mind?
I think something that's on the ballot that might interest the listeners is the change to the bail requirements of the state constitution.
Let's hold that just for a second, the state bail requirements, and we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Ralph Kelly.
Ralph, good morning. Hope you're feeling well.
Good morning.
Pardon my interruptions. How's it going? Go ahead.
All right. I have a question. Judge Macias' name came up, and otherwise I wouldn't have brought this up. As a district attorney, how do you feel when you prosecute, convict an individual, and Judge Macias gives us 2-year suspended sentence to an individual that took 2 shots at Las Cruces police officers? How would you feel about that?
Brad, well, of course, I don't know the case you're talking about, but I will say that when I was a state legislator, I wrote the code that's still on the books. That's the 18 months, 3 years, 9 years, and 18 years. I wrote the habitual criminal enhancement statute and the fireman enhancement statute.
So you're an expert on this. So he's asking, what is your response if a judge gives a person who shot twice, according to Ralph, I think the story's been in the paper, if the judge gave a person who shot at the police twice a 2-year suspended sentence, what would your reaction be?
Right. And so that was going to be my point about that. We have a sentencing structure, and I think that people who come before the judges need to be sentenced according to the structure. And so the degree of the crime to which this man was convicted, I don't know, let's call it a second-degree felony, 9 years. He ought to get the 9 years, and that's simple enough.
Ralph?
That can't believe Judge Macias has had a pretty good record, and I just couldn't believe it. I thought there was a misprint or something. That is just not the way he operates, and that is totally wrong. You take a shot at him. First of all, the LCPD should have returned fire, but they didn't. You have to compliment them on that.
Maybe they're gun jammed.
No, that's poor excuse, Kelly. No, guns don't jam, not when you have a whole bunch of people around you. But anyway, thank you for listening to me.
Wonderful call, Ralph, and hope you're feeling good today. Hang in there, brother, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Flying the Friendly Skies 747. I don't really know anything about that case, so I couldn't really comment. I know that Judge Macias is a genius, though. I can't imagine he'd make a mistake.
Well, likewise, I don't know that particular case either, but I just think as a general rule, if you follow the sentencing guideline that I said, if it's a second-degree felony, you ought to get the 9 years. People know what to expect. They know the punishment for the crime, and they ought to serve it.
Yes. Well, hats off to Judge Macias, but I don't know anything about... Oh, we got another call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
I thought it was Judge Macias. Go ahead, Donna.
Well, I just want to say that I think Brad Cates would be the best district attorney that Doniana County has ever had. I am going to vote for him, and I encourage everybody else to do that, too.
Thank you, Donna. I hope you have a wonderful day. Good call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Anyway, Judge, I believe that Judge Macias listens to my show and laughs and claps and occasionally cries. He's a big fan. I'm hoping anyway.
I don't know if Judge Macias listens, but we certainly appreciate
Donna's listening.
She has a very astute comment, I would add.
If he doesn't, I want to get him into the listenership. Kelly O'Connell with Brad Cates. Brad Cates is a fun guy to hang around, I'll tell you that. 7:49 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. And we'll be right back to continue on our conversation about this DA's race. And it's 7:53 on the button, and we've got Brad Cates here running for DA. And Brad, you had mentioned something about a constitutional amendment.
Right. It's on the ballot, and I thought I'd mention it to your listeners. Under the current regime in the Constitution, people are entitled to bail, and that's bad in a lot of respects. If you happen to be poor but are harmless, can't get out of jail. So you're sitting in jail because you can't make bond. On the other hand, if you're a violent person who needs to be in jail, if you happen to make bond, you can get out. So it's not good for the judges or the prosecutors or the citizenry. And what the new one, the proposed amendment, which has been endorsed by the state Supreme Court, and of course it passed the legislature, will give judges and prosecutors the ability to let people out of prison without even out of jail, without even posting a bond, if they are not a flight risk or violent. On the other hand, no matter how rich you are, no matter how big of a bond you can post, if you shouldn't be out of jail waiting the trial, it gives the prosecutors the ability to keep you in there. I think it'll protect the public quite a bit.
Sounds good. But except for the, unless you're a bail, you run a bail company.
Well, the bail bondsmen were all there during the legislature lobbying one way or the other, and they their concerns were addressed as well. So I think at the end of the day, what passed was the consensus of all the brief parties.
The right to bail goes back before the Magna Carta, I believe, into the Assizes of Clarendon, one of the early English legal documents. Go ahead, please.
Well, of course, it's well founded in English common law, but I would say that the federal system now does what we're going with the state, and most of the state systems now do that as well. It's just so much better. I will tell you, though, there's a change in the federal law that's being proposed, and if it's not voted down by Congress by December 10th, it'll pass, and it's a terrible idea. It's the Rules of Evidence, number 41, and what it says is that when the federal government applies for a warrant, right now they have to apply for a warrant within the judicial district. And maybe this is a little complicated for your average listener, but it's like the FBI here, they know about Kelly. They present probable cause to a local magistrate. He issues a warrant to search the radio station or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And there's checks and balances in that kind of system. The proposal by the U.S. Department of Justice would let a magistrate here issue a warrant nationwide in all districts in the country, so that this magistrate here, this federal judge here, hears this piece of evidence, and all of a sudden you've got raids going down in every district in the country. It's a way big overreach of federal power. They're continually undercutting the Fourth Amendment and your right to...
Let me ask you this. As the DA, would you be willing to stand up against the federal government's overreach?
Well, of course, we had a civil war about that matter. The federal government supreme in things where they have a supremacy. We know that. But I can speak out against issues like this. This is an overreach. The Fourth Amendment is there again, a crucial pillar of our freedoms.
Is that a yes or a no?
Well, the answer is you speak up when you can, and you know when you can't, like the Supreme Court.
Sounds like a political answer.
No, it's not a political answer. It's a legal answer. You're a lawyer, Kelly. You know that perfectly well.
I think the sheriff and the DA have to be willing to stand up against the feds if the feds are in the wrong.
Well, of course you stand up. Of course you speak. You speak out, but... By stand up, you mean you
push back.
Well, push back versus how about the Supreme Court justice, right, in Alabama, right? Recently, Roy Moore. He defied them. You can't do that. I mean, there is a supremacy.
Is he still on the bench?
Back. No, he was removed last week.
Oh, okay. Well, he'll find something else to do.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Brad Cates.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. You're always a lot of fun. Or maybe we can see each other next week.
Can we possibly get a law in the Constitution about political buses emptying their effluent into the open sewer system?
Well, if we have another special session, we should certainly add that to the call. Wouldn't you say?
Yes, and if it's got if such a bus has a picture of Hillary, the fine should be doubled.
Fair enough.
For an attack against local aesthetics. 7:58, listening to Kelly O'Connell here with Brad Cates. And one more time, your contact information.
Brad Cates, number four, bradcatesforda.org.
You have a phone, or is that private?
It's all in there. We've got
reason to put the phone on the air. It's all in there. Thank you. Thanks for coming on. 7:58, and so we're going to have as many of these local politicos on that well, it's Weird Wednesday, isn't it? A guy got on a bus in Chicago. All bad things either happen in Florida or Chicago. 27-year-old guy got on the bus and made a pass at a woman, and she declined his romantic interest. So he hit her in the face with a bag of chicken. The bus driver came back, and the guy picked up the same bag of chicken and hit the bus driver and beat him with a bag of frozen chicken. So don't put Chicago on your place, your list of places to visit. Thanks for tuning in, 759 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, and we'll catch up with you in 22 hours. Have a great day. Enjoy the weather. Ciao.